the era is an interesting parasha because it sort of ends in the middle. It doesn't end at the end, meaning it ends at a very strange point in the story. Right? You have the story of the Eser Makos, and we don't even end after the Tzach Hadash. It's the Tzach Hadash B, right? And then we end right after Makos Barad. It's a narrative would naturally connect from one parasha to the next, but there's usually a logical place to stop where the Torah puts an end of a parasha. But Parshas Ve'era ends with Barad. Now, obviously, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is not going to all fit into one parasha. It's going to take up several parshios. But why can't at least all 10 makos appear in one parsha, and then have the next parsha be about the actual leaving Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, something like that? The makos don't even get started in Parshas Vayera until Revi. So couldn't this have been divided in a more logical way? Why is Barad of all makos like a logical endpoint? Makos Barad is also unique in that HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces Makos Barad by clearly stating what the goal is. He clearly states what his intentions are by making Makos Barad happen. And here's what Hashem says in the Torah HaKadosha. Ki bapam hazos ani shalech es kol magav hasi al libecha uba'avdecha uba'amcha ba'avur teda ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what I'm going to send? Kol magefasi, all the magefos, everything. What's everything? Makos Barad. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm going to send all of my plagues. And look, as impressive as Makos Barad is, and it's pretty impressive and probably very painful maka for the Egyptians, it was a single maka. It wasn't all of the makos, it wasn't all of the plagues. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu refer to Makos Barad as all of the plagues? And third thing about Makos Barad, what was the point of the water part of Makos Barad? Meaning, you want to wreak havoc and destruction. So imagine someone were to tell you, they have a flamethrower, and they're going to shoot flames at you. So, scary. I don't want that. Don't shoot flames at me. Not interested. Person says, yeah, I'm going to make it even worse. Together with the flames, you're also going to have like a spritz of water also. Well, that sounds kind of gishmak. The flames part I could do without, but the spritz, that wouldn't be so bad. In what way does the water part of Makos Barad make it a worse makkah? If anything, it makes it a better makkah. It makes it more tolerable. It still sounds pretty painful, but I'd be scared if you were shooting me with a flamethrower, but a little less so if there was some water involved. So what's the point of the combination of the water and fire together? So again, three questions. Why Parshas Ve'era ends with Makos Barad? Second question is, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces Makos Barad by saying, this is all of my makos? And third question, what the point of having the fire and the water combining? What's the purpose of that? So in order to understand the point of this parsha, it's important to understand the goal of the entire episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This whole ordeal that the Egyptians were put through, and that Klal Yisrael got to experience, this elevating experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Who sets the agenda for what Yetzias Mitzrayim is meant to accomplish? Who sets the agenda? So what would you say? Who sets the agenda? Who decides? So God, right? If you had to guess someone else? Moshe. Right? What if I were to tell you Paro set the agenda for Yetzias Mitzrayim? Unwittingly, not on purpose, but Paro set the agenda for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Not Moshe, not Aaron. Paro, at the end of last week's parsha, upon Moshe Rabbeinu's first request to release the Bnei Yisrael, what does Paro say? Mi Hashem asher ashma b'kolo l'shalach es Yisrael. Who is this Hashem? Lo yadati es Hashem. That's the idea that Das was in exile in Mitzrayim, and the Geulas Mitzrayim was the Geula of Das. Lo yadati, I don't know Hashem. I don't have a das of Hashem. So therefore, v'gam es Yisrael lo ashalech. I'm not sending Klal Yisrael out because I don't know who Hashem is. Paro asks that critical question that sets the agenda. Who is Hashem? You know what Hashem's response is? Allow me to introduce myself, right? And everything that follows, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, here, this is what you didn't know. I am Hashem. This is what Hashem is. So when viewed in that context, the whole series of the Eser Makos takes on a whole new meaning. How does who in fact is Hashem? Right? Meaning, what taka is the answer? So if you were to ask a Bible critic, you were to ask, an apikoros who studies the Bible and has to figure out who Hashem is, what would he tell you? Oh, there's more than one God. There's Hashem that is Yudkei Vavkei, and there's Hashem that is Elohim. And those are two different characters, because that's what you do, that's what Bible critics do, right? They think there's two different characters, and these two different characters each accomplish their own things and each do their own things. Obviously, we're not Bible critics, nor are we apikorsim, hopefully, right? So Hashem and Elohim are somehow the same. So, and amazingly, the first 34 times that Hashem is mentioned in the Torah, the term used is Elohim. It's not Hashem. First 34 times Hashem appears in the Torah, it's Elohim. Once man is created, it changes to Hashem Elohim. Now, what do the names Elohim and Hashem signify? So we know that Elohim is Din, Hashem, Rachamim. Hashem Elohim, combination of Din and Rachamim. Once, when God originally created the world, Din, right? That's what Chazal tell us, that Mitchila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world only with Midas HaDin. But once he created man, and he saw that man can never survive with Midas HaDin, what did he have to do? He had to be Mishtatef Midas HaRachamim together with Midas HaDin. Because man cannot survive with Midas HaDin alone. And that's why when man is created, it's Hashem Elohim. Makes a lot of sense. Man can't survive with Midas HaDin, man needs Rachamim as well. But for man to survive, right, for man to survive, Rachamim is critical, although Din is also an important thing, because there have to be consequences to what we do. But then something changes. After man is created, the episode of the Nachash happens. And once that happens, the two names together, Hashem and Elohim, with one single exception, in Kala Torah Kula, the two names together, Hashem and Elohim, never appear together. Hashem is either Hashem or he's Elohim. So when the Torah starts, he's Elohim. Man is created, he's Hashem Elohim. The sin with the Nachash HaKadmoni happens, now it's, you have options. Sometimes Hashem, sometimes Elohim, but never Hashem Elohim. Never together with only a single exception in the entire Torah. So Rabbi Asher Brander, from Los Angeles, in his beautiful, he has two beautiful Svarim on Chumash called Teachings. So in his second book on Chumash, Teachings, Volume 2, for some reason that didn't make it to the Svarim stores in the East Coast, I don't think, the Volume 2. But in Volume 2, he says that we sometimes perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu of mercy, we sometimes perceive Hashem as Hashem, and we sometimes perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Din, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu of judgment. And that's in the human perception. We sometimes see an Elohim. In a perfect world, we would realize that they're one and the same. Meaning, in a perfect world, it wouldn't just be an intellectual knowledge that they're both the same. We'd be able to internalize that they're both the same. That it makes sense that the same Hashem who gives us mercy is the Elohim who gives us judgment. And we would appreciate it. And that's what the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Nun tells us. Lo ka'olam hazeh ha'olam haba. The way we perceive things in this world is not the reality as it will be perceived in Olam Haba. In this world, when good things happen, we say Atov Ametiv. When bad things happen, we say Dynamis. Liolam Haba, Kulo Tov, Hatov Ametiv. In Olam Haba, no matter what happens, we'll always appreciate that it's Hatov Ametiv. Meaning, and the Gemara goes on to describe, the recognition of Hashem Echad only happens in the ideal world, in the world to come, in the Olam Haba. So we know intellectually, if someone to ask you, how many gods are there? No, I'm not an apikoros, I'm not a Bible critic. There is only Hashem Echad, there is only one God, of course. But we don't have the kelim to properly internalize that. We can't possibly appreciate and perceive the same Hashem who gave a refuah also gave the suffering and the illness that preceded it. The same Hashem who gives a refuah to one person gives Yisurin and constant suffering and an early demise to another person. We can't really fully internalize why that would be the case. Why is it Sadik Veralo so often? We say it many times to try to, like, as a mantra, to sort of build up that emuna in ourselves, that it's the same Hashem. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu is Hashem Echad. Hashem Elokeinu. It's all Hashem Echad. It's all one Hashem. And we try to convince ourselves, but we won't fully understand that until La'asadava. When our Emunah is at its peak in the Jewish calendar, at what point do we feel closest to Hashem probably in the entire year in the Jewish calendar? What? Yom Kippur. The end of Ni'ilan Yom Kippur, right? So what do we scream out? Hashem Hu Elokim. Hashem is Elokim. Because it's dafka when we're getting close to the emes, when we're getting close to fully appreciating Hashem, when we're getting close to understanding Hashem. As we get closer and closer, we begin to understand. When a person is about to leave this world, and he's about to greet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's about to see things from a loss of level perspective, the last words on his lips, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that it's all the same Hashem. That's as we get closer to the emes. But maybe that's why through the entire Torah, the names Hashem and Elokim never appear together except for one place. They never appear together because we can't perceive that. We can't perceive Hashem and Elokim as a single unit. Before the Eitz Hadas, yes. Afterwards, we can't. I keep saying this, that instead of except for one place. There's one place where Hashem and Elokim appears together. No, so what's that one place? Makas Barad. What happened in Makas Barad? That Hashem Elokim appears together? Moshe says, Va'ata yadati ki terem tirun mipnei Hashem Elokim. The one moment where there was a recognition of Hashem of mercy and Elokim of justice being the same God is Makas Barad. For that brief moment, we enjoyed like a La'asid level view, a Gan Eden view of Hashem Elokim together, a pre-Nachash, pre-Eitz Hadas view. Up until that point, we've been enjoying the Makos against our oppressors, but in the back of our minds, we're still thinking, how can we reconcile that God with the God who put us here in the first place? Meaning, Hashem is making them suffer, and it's great for us, but like, Hashem also put us here. You know, Hashem is making them suffer, so good, he's really good at bringing about suffering, how about bringing about some joy for ourselves? Okay, so that's going to happen later. But there, Makas Barad, that's a turning point. That's where the two meet. And that's why it was specifically Makas Barad where conflicting powers coexist. The point of Makas, you know, of Makas Dam through Barad was not to see how badly they can suffer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made a Makkah that comes and plucks out hair by hair and then cuts off each of their fingers and pours lemon juice in the... I don't know. He could have come up he could have waterboarded all of them all every day. He could have come up with other things, right? He could have done things that would torture them. That's not what the Makkos were. The Makkos were responding to the agenda that was set by Paro. Paro says, who is Hashem? So Hashem says, allow me to introduce myself. I am Hashem, I am Elokim, and that is Hashem Echad. That is all the same Hashem. And that's why Dafka and Makas Barad, that's where it comes out. In Makas Barad, we have the combination of two opposing forces, two things that seem, based on the physical world as we know it, cannot coexist. Fire and water cannot coexist. From an Olam Hazeh perspective, Hashem and Elokim cannot be the same. Because Baruch Hu says, but yes it can. And that's what Makas Barad represents. That's the perfect stopping point for our parsha. Because next week we're going to learn about the knockout punch that forces Paro to send us out of Mitzrayim. But that's not the story of this week's parsha. This week the story is the answer to Paro's question. Who is Hashem? Because that was the question that was at the very end of last week's parsha. Who is Hashem? This week we learn about what the answer is. Who is Hashem? He is Hashem. He is Elokim. And ultimately, he is Hashem. Hu Elokim. He is the same Hashem that's Elokim. He's opposing forces simultaneously. Now, obviously, like we said, we can't fully appreciate that or understand that. And we do say brachos of Dayan HaEmes in this world. And not everything is HaTova HaMeitiv. That's just the way we have to live our lives. But we also, anytime we have any sort of insight into the Ribono Shel Olam, into how the Ribono Shel Olam operates, what the Ribono Shel Olam is, it's an opportunity for us to learn about what our responsibilities are. Because we know Chazal tells us in a number of places, Mahu Afata. the extent to which you understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're supposed to mimic the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chazal tell us, for example, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mevaker Cholim, you should be Mevaker Cholim, just like he's Malbish Arumim, you should be Malbish Arumim, provide clothing for people, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Rachum V'Chanun, you should be Rachum V'Chanun, all of these things. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be two opposing things at the same time. Two things that don't seem to shtim. Sometimes we also have to be two opposing things at the same time, which is a difficult thing to be. You know, you describe what kind of personality. Sometimes you get a call, a shidduch call. Describe him. It's very hard. A human being is a complex organism, right? So describe. Describe the person. I mean, sometimes it's easy because sometimes the person doesn't care about what the person is like. I've gotten shidduch calls, and I am not uttering a word of exaggeration or sheker in the following. I got a shidduch call. Question number one, does he wear a black hat? No. Question number two, does he wear a white shirt? Sometimes. Question number three, on Shabbos, how does he dress to shul on Shabbos? He wears nice Shabbos clothing. And then the conversation ended. The person said, okay, thank you very much. And I said, wait, yeah, don't you want to know if he's a nice guy? Don't you want to know if he's a good person? I felt like at the end of the conversation, like, we have nothing in common. You know, like, there's nothing that you value that I value, and nothing that I value that you value. Like, I don't know why you would call me to discuss this, right? We have, like, nothing in common in terms of values. Like, why would you ask me these questions? It was like, stunning. I'll contrast that. I think I've mentioned this to you. I got a call from a person who is an extremely high-achieving person. A billionaire. And I mean that not in the exaggerated sense, in a very literal sense. It's a matter of public record. His Wikipedia page says he's a billionaire. And he's a significant Talmud Chacham. He's written Svarim. And he's Marbitz Torah to thousands of people. And he was calling me about a shidduch for one of his children, for his daughter. He only had one question. One question. I would think, you know, the question is, how high achieving, how high powered, what was his one question? Will the guy be nice to my daughter? Is he going to be a good husband to my daughter? Finally, someone who's asking the right question, right? That's the only one that matters, right? You know, everything else will be megala, maybe. You know, there are a lot of indicators of whether something, but that's the only one that really matters. It happens to be the guy that he was asking that I didn't know personally, so I asked some of his rebbeim. They said, oh, he's brilliant, he's this, he's that. I said, will he be nice to him? Nah, he probably won't be. Okay, so that was it. So that was the only one. So why do I mention all this? Sometimes a person is a complex organism, but a person is supposed to be complex. A person is not supposed to have a mida that is a consistent mida that's always the same. I've pointed out to you in the past, Rav Meir Tversky Shlita has pointed out that when the Rambam refers to the Shvil Hazav, that a person is supposed to walk life on, right? He's supposed to not be to this or to that, right? So Meir Tversky pointed out, it doesn't mean that a person is supposed to be in the middle. It means that a person is supposed to simultaneously incorporate both extremes into his personality. Very different. In the middle is that, neither here nor there. Yeah, I'm not so intense about anything. I'm not so laid back about anything. So I'm not intense about my learning. I'm not laid back about anything, either. I'm somewhere in the middle. I have mild anxiety, right, about everything. So that's not the goal, right? The goal is to be super intense about certain things, about your learning, your avodas Hashem, your Yiddishkeit, your family, right? Super intense about certain things, and super laid back about other things. To know that, you know, your kavod doesn't matter so much. Yeah, it's really, I'm so sorry I did that. Yeah, it's okay, it's fine. Lay back, relax. And this is something that Ben Torah has to learn to incorporate. To have super, even gaiva, which is the aviyah v'osatum of all midos ra'os, which you have to stay far, far away from. But there's a, the Sadiqim writes, a gaiva in Yiddishkeit, a pride of what it means to be a Jew. should be super proud to be a Jew. Not like, okay, I guess it's not so bad to be a Jew. No, super proud to be a Jew. That level of pride. And super humble about everything else that you are, or that you do, or that you accomplish. Simultaneously incorporate both. It's a very important hashkafa to have in general, and when going into vacation. When going into vacation, sometimes we get into a mode where it's like, okay, it's relaxed mode. So relaxed mode means what? So some people it means I do nothing. I will take a week or two where I will do nothing. How will you feel after a week or two of doing nothing? You feel like a piece of garbage. After a day of doing nothing, you feel like a piece of garbage. Because that's not what we're meant to do. We're meant to be intense and at the same time be relaxed. And it's very important that we have those times where there's a little more emphasis on the relaxation and times where there's a little more emphasis on the intensity. But we have to simultaneously incorporate both. We still have to be intense about our tefillah. The way we daven during vacation should be at least as strong as the way we daven when we're not on vacation. With a passion, with a fire, with an intensity. That there should be learning, okay, is it going to be as much when you're, I don't know, traveling in Iceland or something? Is it as much? Maybe quantitatively not as much, but there has to be, right? And that's certainly understandable. A right? Person needs a break. A person needs some time away. And good, relax, good. Go to a nice place that you've never seen before. Relax with intensity. You know, like, be super relaxed. But also make sure that we simultaneously incorporate the proper amount of intensity. That's part of Mahu Afata. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces himself to Paro with Makos Barad. We are supposed to take from that, oh, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what we're supposed to strive to emulate.